Well, let's talk about your stuff a little bit, because I think that you just had a very successful show at the Reynolds Gallery in Richmond, Virginia. You've had a very good couple of years here recently with a number of awards and getting a lot of people looking and talking about your work. Yours is in my mind, a very sophisticated kind of abstraction, because it doesn't deal with the easy things in abstraction. You're not trying to make it be a metaphor. You're not trying to make it be an analogy or a symbol or an illusion. The word onomatopoeia comes to mind when I look at your work. A painting like Flutter that's on view right now in a gallery. It's not an illustration. When I look at it, I sense air and water and light, and it has... There's no air or light or water in this thing, but it's that sensation, and it captures that sensation in the same way that a word like buzz captures the sensation of that sound. How do you understand your work if it isn't metaphor or analogy or illusion? Or
I understand my work by making it. That's how I understand my work. I don't know what I'm going to do before. Even if I think about what I think I'm going to do before, it doesn't happen in the process. Something else takes over, and I'm so willing to make that turn. I am not ever dogmatic. I mean, if I think I'm going to do something and something happens in the process, I'm not going to say, well, that was my initial idea. I'm going to take any turn it's going to take me to. So much is tied up in the material and in the process of painting. When it's over, I think again. And I have almost longer time looking at the painting than I do making the painting, which I've realized over the years that's changed over the years. I tried to have paintings done, like for a show like this that was in January, the work was really done by late November, because I really need a long time to look at this work and decide whether it really is finished. Yeah, you know, people always say, well, how do you know when you're done? I mean, it's like when nothing is gnawing at me, you know, when nothing looks like, oh, you could do this better. Were you going to just leave it alone? No, you're really going to take care of it. There is a long time to sit and digest, and it is such a nonverbal process that this makes it almost impossible to talk about. It really is. I mean, there's so much, there's over 30 years of making decisions that happens. Things that I've looked at, things that I've thought about, things that people have told me. I mean, it's all in there. And the moment that I paint it and the moment that it's painted, it's all there. I guess I just make a tremendous amount of decisions and the most intuitive level when I'm working. Joseph Beuys has that great quote of intuition's the highest form of rationale or reason. Maybe it's reason. But intuition is based on so much. I mean, it's not based on not knowing something. You know, it gets called this woman's intuition. And so it gets negated or gets knocked down a couple of notches. But intuition is based on all the experience and all the things that you've learned. And then you do it in the moment. I mean, I've always described painting almost like learning to drive a stick shift. Put your foot down the clutch and then you slowly lift, and you have to, and you're talking to yourself the entire time. And when I used to paint, I would talk to myself, and what about the composition? What about the coolness of the color? And now it's just like I'm just flat out. I mean, I've read this. I've understood it when I've read it. It's like something takes over me. I'm not sure I'm really there anymore. And I know that sounds like magic, and it really starts sounding like, you know, the stuff that makes you kind of feel icky about. But if I'm too conscious of what I'm doing or self-conscious, it's just not going to work. I really need to be in whatever that wonderful place is that you go to, and you're just there with it. You're just there with it, and you're doing whatever you need to be doing, and then you come out of it and you take a look at it where the intellect follows your intuition.
It's what the psychologist up at University of Chicago, Csikszentmihalyi, calls flow, when the world just completely dissolves away.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Augustine said, you know, when your critics leave and when your family leaves the studio and then when your friends leave the studio and you finally start working when you finally leave the studio, you know, and it's true. I mean, that noise, that's why I go back for more. It's the only place in my life that I have this extraordinary lack of self-consciousness or whatever that is. And it's It's heavenly.
Addictive?
Addictive, right.
What do you consider more pertinent for you when you're in the studio? Is it how you put the paint on the canvas or why? Or is it a matter of it's why you're there, it's putting it on, and that second phase that you talked about of part of the process of making art is looking at it and thinking about it?
I think it's a combination of both. Really, I bring everything I got into the studio. But when I'm painting, I really leave my intellect out. I trust that there's just so much I know about painting that I don't really have to think about it. I'll make the right decision.
I guess as you're talking, I'm thinking about your son who has just discovered his, as a surprise to everybody, his own interest in art. And he's at that stage that you were at as a young person where he does have to think about everything. Do you see him struggling with the things that, have you watched him paint that you know what he needs to be doing or where he needs to be going and you can see him struggling because he doesn't have that information yet, that knowledge yet?
He has he has so much more than I had at that age. First of all, I didn't make art at 18 years old or 17 years old. I mean, I kind of doodled and I didn't know who I was or where I was going. And I certainly didn't know I was an artist. I made the mistake of going to Fashion Institute of Technology, you know, for textile design, and I was anything but a designer. But no one said to me, you're an artist, not a designer. So lots of painful years, and you know, finally the counselor at Fashion Institute told me I should become a nurse or a teacher. But certainly not. It was really one of those, you know, nightmarish times. Pierre comes with advantage. My son comes with the advantage of 18 years being brought up in an enormously, you know, talented, sophisticated art community. He has looked at very, very good people for a very, very long time. I came downstairs one day and I caught him looking at Donato's painting. And he said, well, how did he do this? You know, and even though I had real art in my house, it was very kind of conventional. They were very nice watercolors, but they weren't anyone famous. They were friends of my parents, and my mother drew beautifully, but she illustrated, she rendered, and she never knew what I was doing. When I finally went to the Art Students League, she had no idea what I was showing her. She was like, well, this is kind of nice, and I'll frame it because you've done it, but what is it? And even though they were very well-read and loved music and things like that, they really didn't have a very high... They weren't tremendously sophisticated around the visual arts, where Pierre's had that advantage. And it shows in his work already. So I'm very curious. I think for him it's going to be more of honing in and being disciplined, but God knows when that kicks in. It didn't kick in for me for years. So who knows?
Okay, let me end with one last question. You just had an exhibition at the gallery where I work that was a group exhibition called Pivot Points, which is now traveling around the country and will be for the next year and a half, almost 2 years, I guess, around the country. Yeah. And also you're doing some international venues. And actually, which is kind of related to what we were talking about, the whole premise of Pivot Points was it's six artists and six poets, three generations. So it's the first generation, the two poets and the two painters were teaching the next generation, who then taught the next generation, and all three are in the exhibition itself. Talk a little bit about that and what it was like seeing that exhibition up where you could actually follow the influences visually.
It was interesting because I actually worked with Victor Cord and Rennie Gower. Rennie was on my committee when I was in graduate school, and even though we're in the same generation because we later on taught the third generation down, it was just an interesting process. I was very amazed of how well it all held together. The work really, really holds together, and no one knew what each one of us was going to put in the show. I thought that was interesting, and how well it worked with the written word. There was something that you were going to ask me about where the kind of discipline abstraction might be, and you use philosophy, religion. Yeah. I think it's poetry. I mean, for me, it's poetry. And it was my idea to include poets in this exhibition. Initially, it was just going to be six painters' work on paper. And for some reason, the work, when I started seeing the slides, and I had read something about Susan Rothenberg and poetry, and I went, doing. And I thought, this is going to be much, much richer if we stretch this out. And again, it's almost like my own painting in some ways. I never know really what it's going to look like, but I just kind of have a hunch and want to see what it could look like. And this, that show really came together that way. We didn't really know, and in fact, it was a very hard show to sell to people that wanted to have very literal link-ups. And people would say, well, what's the connection? And we'd say, well, it's all on paper. And for me, there was just such a clear connection between this work and the poetry that was being, the poetry in general, and then the actual poems themselves really started when two people meet and they start finding out who they are, and there are these connections, and it's very, very exciting. And that's exactly what the show really feels like to me. And it was a pleasure seeing it initiate, premiere at your space. Yeah. And it's more than I thought it was going to be. And that's always very exciting. Yes. Yeah.
I was curious how it was going to work as well, having poetry in an art gallery. And it was really interesting over the course of a month to watch the kind of resonance that happened, is that the right word, between the paintings and the poetry, mm-hmm. and how many people stop to read the poetry and then look at the painting, go back to the poem, or vice versa. Talk about opening up doors and trying to involve
right.
people.
Right.
There really was a dialogue that was happening between the poetry and the painting, and the audience was very receptive to that and really worked at it. It was a curious thing. We had a reception that you were at, and Greg Donovan, one of the poets, was there. And at one point, someone was standing there reading his poetry. And I started to go up to say something to him, and he brushed me. He kind of made a motion for me to be quiet until the person finished reading the poems. And then, honestly, I thought he was going to burst into tears because
yes.
he said, you know, I've
yes.
never watched someone read my poems before.
I remember the first time I watched someone stop and look at my work. It was like, oh, my, they're interested, you know. And for Greg, it was that experience. And I thought, how unique. You don't watch people read your book or read your poem. And so that was a very, that was like something brand new, which was great, too.
I'd love to see more exhibitions along that line. It was. And then the paintings, the whole premise of the exhibition of Pivot Points being this generational evolution, it really was a little like being at a family reunion mm-hmm. where you could see relationships. You could there were traces, but they were all individual, autonomous.
Especially the way things get taught at VCU. This is basically in VCU, even though not everybody's attached to VCU. But I think the majority of the artists are. And certainly in the everyone in the painter's realm, except one person, has been a VCU or taught a VCU. And yet the way things are taught at VCU is not... I would be horrified if my students all started looking like Sally Ballerines, and you don't want to teach that way, and you want to encourage their own voice, and you do have that sense of their own, and yet it is... there is something familiar about it.
A gene got passed
right.
down somewhere.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You've used the word hypostasis in describing your work. And can you talk a little bit about what you consider, what way do you think that your work is a visualization of your essential nature, whether that's as a mother or a wife or a friend or a woman in the 21st century?
Food. I like making a good meal for my friends, and I look at my paintings as good meals. You hopefully have a lot to taste, and God, I don't want to turn this into Martha Stewart, but I think that there's a sense of generosity. It goes back to almost where we started. The nature that they're small events put together next, building from these small pieces, and they're all put together is so reflective of my crazy segmented life. I've run from different jobs. I now have two different jobs, and I get involved in other things. And yes, I'm a mother, so on the same day that I'm sitting in a public art commission meeting, I'm also going to look at my basketball game with my sons. And so you switch audiences, you switch friends, you switch groups of people that you're around. And I think the paintings reflect that. I think the structure reflects that, and then some of what's happening in the painting reflects that also. I've heard this, and I don't know if it's true, but I'll mention it. I've heard that this layering process, this veil, and I call it veiling in my own work. I love Mark Harris called it weather. I thought it was great. And maybe it is the weather. I'm always preoccupied with what's going to happen with the weather. But is tied to women's paintings. And I don't really look at work that way. I used to. And I really don't. I've gone back to almost the way I felt prior to the women's movement in the 70s, that, it's genderless. It should be genderless. And that's not to open the Pandora's box about women's rights and everything else. But there is that kind of layering going on that is reflective of a lot of living also. So I think that reflects my immediate moment in time.
Sally, thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.